Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the Edmore Sawgrass Buick GMC Studios, Morse has more. Visit EdmoreSawgrass.com. This is the Alex Dotto Show on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is. The 7 o'clock hour of the Alex Dotto Show here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. We're streaming all over the internet, WQAM.com on the computer or on your smartphone on the TuneIn radio app or the radio.com app. However you listen, we appreciate your patronage, and we go out and out of the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Our friend Ira Winderman, who covers the Miami Heat and the NBA for the South Florida Sun Sentinel, he joins us now. Ira, I know you're traveling. I'm hoping you're on your way to Lithuania to cover the Ball Brothers. Did the Sun Sentinel, are they stretching that budget to send you to the jewel of the Baltic Sea?
You know what? First of all, from what I've heard about there, I would love to go.
Yeah.
But did you hear about the coach and what he does as a side job?
No.
Coaching the two Ball Sons?
No.
Apparently, he sells meat out of the trunk of his car to his players after the game.
And
as you know, you can't make that kind of stuff up.
Oh, my God.
So it would be like the equivalent of me covering a practice here, about to go to the garage at the American Airlines Arena, and then Pat Riley trying to delight me in some interesting sirloin.
I think I would buy sirloin from Pat Riley if he tried
exactly
to sell it to
like
me.
And also, I guess the thing is, you know, if it's Pat, it's going to either Kobe beef or else, you know, filet or something.
Yeah.
So that's true also.
Well, I don't know anything about the Lithuanian Basketball League. Like, where do they rank with some of those other European countries?
Lithuania is one of, I believe, two countries in the world where basketball is the number one sport.
Okay.
I believe the Philippines is the other. No offense to America. We have football here. It's a bigger spectator sport. But the domestic league there, almost all of their players have gone to, usually they wind up playing in Spain or the other top European league. The pay per game there is about $500.
Whoa.
It is not a good league at all. Now, I have no issue with the older Ball Son who was at UCLA. He would come out and get a job anyway. But honestly, and again, God bless LeVar Ball. He loves his sons. He obviously is a father who spends time with his sons. And as we know in America, that's a wonderful thing. But to put a high school kid, age 16, in that situation, I mean, Alex, don't you reach a point where it becomes a bit much?
Yes.
I think that's where this story sort of took a sort of odd and maybe not very familial tone. So as much as I enjoy laughing along, you know, and whatever, it's just sports. Let's all just have fun anyway. To me, the difference is when you get to that level and you're talking about a 16-year-old, don't want to say child abuse. That's not the right way to phrase it. But it does seem a little bit odd that you'd put a kid in that situation.
Well, and even, you know, with LeVar Ball domestically, Ira, a lot of stuff coming out over the last several days about, you know, the Lakers having a chat with him, trying to get him to tone it down. Because from what I understand, Ira, around the time Lonzo was about to get drafted, he had told the Lakers, don't worry, guys, I'll tone it down. As soon as he's drafted, I'm just playing a character. I'm going to focus on my younger sons once Lonzo is on your team. Instead, he criticizes the Lakers left and right.
Caveat emptor. That's the whole thing. It's you know, it's funny. It reminds me of, what was it, Cam Cameron who said we're drafting the whole Ginn family?
Yes.
Ginn was drafted, am I right?
Yes, that's right.
You draft the whole family. Look, when the Heat drafted Michael Beasley, it's a great story. So the Heat took a chance. We all knew that Michael, I think, went to like 19 different high schools. There was plenty of issues at play, but the Heat felt after Derrick Rose, or at least at the time, that was the right pick. So Michael Beasley comes down to American Airlines Arena, comes down with his mom is there also. They're in sort of the green room getting ready for his introduction. And Michael Beasley's mother goes to Pat Riley, would you be a dear, please, and get me a glass of water? And from that moment, you just knew how south that thing was going. It was not a surprise that he was drafted number two in 2008. And by 2010, he was gone.
Yeah.
So again, you know, for all the Cam Cameron jokes, you do draft the family. you know what you're getting into. The Lakers can't come back and say, wow, we never thought it would be this bad, because it was this bad the entire, his son's entire season at UCLA anyway.
Ira, let's talk about last night with the Heat. So with 8.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, the Heat are up 16. I'm kicking my feet up. I figure, okay, sure, we got this. And then Damian Lillard happened. Poor free throw shooting happened. My night was ruined. What does last night's collapse, or whatever you want to call it, say about this Miami Heat team?
It says to you that you can say all you want that Deion Waiters is a closer, or Goran Dragic is, or anyone else you want to say. The Miami Heat don't have a closer. Because, Alex, you know what the definition of a closer in today's NBA?
What?
The definition is someone who is an all-star, who has been there, seen it, done it consistently. Not Deion Waiters' few moments where it's all or nothing. So the Trailblazers, when they got close enough, said, okay, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, you're our all-stars, take us to the finish line. And they did. And the Heat went the last 2 minutes without scoring. That's why Pat Riley went after Gordon Hayward last summer. That's why he went after Kevin Durant 2 summers ago. The Heat simply are putting themselves in those positions because they don't have that one player, like they did with even Chris Bosh when he would make those what they called relief jumpers and make those points. You need that in today's NBA. Until the Heat get an all-star, or until a Heat player turns into an all-star, that won't necessarily be the exception for them, games like that yesterday.
You know, I read a lot throughout the days. I read opinion pieces and speculation stuff, NBA rumors, and some folks have, you know, Deion Waiters as a potential trade candidate at the deadline. Is there any buyer's remorse from the Heat on giving him the deal that they gave to him?
I think the buyer's remorse might be, if anything, collective, that they spent so many of those contracts, that they didn't sit down and say, you know what? Instead of spending $60 million on James Johnson and $52 million on Kelly Olynyk and $50 on Deion Waiters and $42 on Josh Richardson's extension that starts next summer, and say to themselves, okay, which one or two is the guy here? And is Goran and Hassan still the guy? So instead they have all those sizable contracts. Again, not mega contracts, it's $200 million contracts now, but large enough contracts that they have too many of them. Mm. That's the difference. You know, choose who you like. Every year, QAM comes up and says, these are our four day parts, these are our four hosts, and you ride with them. It would be like QAM or the new bosses or whatever saying, we're going to hire 8 of the best hosts in the country. Well, you only have 4 spots to use them anyway, so it's the rest of the money. Not that you'd be against that, I'm sure, but it's the rest of the money there. I think that's what the Heat did. The Heat had to make decisions. They had to make choices. They loved last year's team, but they knew last year's team was 41-41. Instead, they brought that whole team back. They brought back mid-tier free agent and Kelly Olynyk. And now they're capped out, and they really don't have a lot of flexibility.
Now, on Kelly Olynyk, we saw some of him and Bam together last night. Was that just completely out of necessity for Winslow getting hurt, or could that be a sign of things to come?
At the moment, it was necessity. Not only was Justice Winslow lost with that knee injury that now has him sidelined for at least tomorrow in Charlotte, but also Tyler Johnson missed the game because of migraines. He will be back tomorrow in Charlotte. So there weren't a lot of wing options. So when the guys got tired, they had to go bigger. But Eric Spoelstra said, look, Hassan is on the first team in practice every day when he's healthy. Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk are on the second team. They've played together
right,
a lot, just not in games. Last night, I believe they had played 28 minutes all season together, or they played about 10 or so last night, so now it's 38 minutes. You know what? I've said this from the start. This is what I meant about signing those contracts. When you sign Hassan to $98 million, when you sign Kelly Olynyk to $50 million, when you use your lottery pick on Bam Adebayo, you can't come out the next season and say, well, we can only play one at a time, or else go in a different direction. So I think Eric's supposed to realize it worked well enough last night, he'll try. But you know what? At the first sign of another team going small, will he truly feel comfortable enough with Bam Adebayo on another team's equivalent small forward? Bam on a LeBron, Bam on a Carmelo, Bam, you know, on a player like that. That's what I still have to see before I can tell you about Eric's comfort level.
And speaking on the lineups, Ira, I know Deion Waiters recently went to social media to shoot down fan speculation of him saying that he should come off the bench, that he's a starter. Could that ever be reality with Waiters?
I don't think so. I think you lose certain players when you change their role. This is a guy who played behind first Kyrie Irving and then Kyrie Irving and LeBron James in Cleveland. They played behind Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, and all he wanted was his chance, those two guys in Oklahoma City. So I think you have someone like Tyler Johnson who's shown he's perfectly content to be a reserve. The Heat have gone out of their way not to start him. It's not, to me, Alex, is not about who starts and, you know, and like that. To me, it's about this. Who gets the minutes? Deion Waiters has to earn the minutes by making himself a reliable, smart player. He's not been that. He was that in the victory in Memphis. But if you look at last night's game, he was taking those step-back long two-pointers again. That benefits nobody. He doesn't need to be a hero. Some night is not going to be his night. I think Deion has to accept he got his $52 million. He's set for life, but he is going to be an ensemble player on this team. If he can't wrap his head around that and he tries to be the man too often, then he'll be the man less often when it comes to playing time and minutes.
We are joined here by Ira Winderman, covers the Miami Heat in the NBA for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Ira, how far do you think we are, or how far could we be from a Hassan Whiteside return?
You know, he was at practice today and he did some court work, but his court work was like against the likes of Alonzo Mourning, God bless him, but a little bit older than most players he's going to face. I think the conundrum is this. Dwight Howard had a huge game last night for Charlotte, like 26 points and 17 rebounds against Houston. I don't think you could throw him right back in the fire against that. So he's not traveling to Charlotte, even though that's his hometown. Then you have DeAndre Jordan coming in here on Saturday. You know, sort of the last of the ultimate big men. Maybe you don't want to throw him in against that. I think once you get to Atlanta and then you get to Boston playing a bit smaller with Al Horford in the middle, I think they'll feel more comfortable. So if you were asking me, I would say he'll get a shoot-around in with the team at some point. He'll get one more practice in. Maybe Atlanta Monday night might make sense. But again, I don't feel the man's pain. I don't know exactly where that bone bruise stands.
Ira, where does Charlotte rank among NBA cities?
You know, it's a nice, pleasant place. They've done a really good job with their downtown, which they call Uptown, which always confuses me. Very good restaurants. It's become a very good foodie city also.
Oh, yeah, it's funny. Right where you were saying that, my producer Tito said in my ear, he said the airport food is amazing. That seems like a weird thing to bring up, but I got to try it.
It is a very good foodie city. It has a very nice walkable downtown. The arena is right in the middle of downtown. You know, they host the ACC championship game. They've had some other big playoff games also. It's a nice place to be. There's far worse places. Good people, small enough city that you can get around. So yeah, it's one of the trips I ever say to myself, oh, I don't want to go to Charlotte. And there still are a few cities on that list.
Will you have time in Charlotte to work Star Wars into your schedule between Heat shoot-arounds and games?
You know, I'm sorry. I hate to say it. I know you are. And I remember when you ran out of bought your tickets early. I'm not that guy.
Ira.
Yeah, I know it's a thing for people. I can't get away from it. I don't know why. It seems like every game I go to, though, it's Star Wars night.
Right.
So invariably, I am trying to – usually the press rows in a lot of these arenas, you know, it's second or third level. So I try to walk down the stands before the game is over to get to the press room and interviews. I can't tell you, Alex, how many times lately I've gotten hit by lightsabers. Like, I'm trying to walk through there. You know that drill they have in football when they have that thing, you run through it and you get hit by the phony pads and hands?
Yeah.
That's like me going through the lightsabers. I'm like, wait, there's something wrong here. I'm covering NBA basketball. I shouldn't have lightsaber bruises. I don't even think real lightsabers would give you bruises.
Well, stay safe in those arenas, Ira. It's always nice talking to you, my friend.
All right, I'll stay away from the dark side. Thank you.
Yes, he is Ira Winderman. You want to check out his work at the South Florida Sun Sentinel and follow him on Twitter at Ira Heatbeat. He is right about Star Wars night. It seems like every pro team from the minor leagues up in every sport has at least one Star Wars night per year. And, you know, I got to tell you, I have never had. And you know what? Let me say one thing while I'm on the air, and hopefully people are listening and they know not to bother me with this stuff so much. People think I just have tickets to every game. Like people I went to high school with, casual acquaintances, they think I'm a ticket oak. Like I just print up tickets. Dolphins game, big concert. You want tickets to this NBA All-Star game, Major League Baseball All-Star? Yeah, I got your tickets right here. I don't have tickets to anything. Like every now and then, I'm able to scrounge up a ticket. I don't even have tickets for myself most of the time. Yet I have never had so many requests from people who think that I'm like a scalper. Like I am StubHub. Like I've just got a trunk full of tickets to every concert and every sporting event. But I've never had so many people come out of the woodwork hitting me up for freebies, which I don't have ever, almost never. So many people hit me up for freebies for Star Wars night for Panthers games. Like I am the human ticket oak. People love these Star Wars nights. Like everybody I've ever known, distant relatives that I'm not even sure if they can prove their familial heritage to me will come out and ask me for tickets to a Star Wars night. Stop it. 56022 is how you reach me on the plumbers911.com text line. Don't text and drive, though. You can get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. People liked my advice that if you're trying to introduce someone who's never seen Star Wars to Star Wars, like a Peter Ariz or an Ira Winderman type who have never watched a Star Wars movie, I strongly suggest you don't have them watch Episode 1 first. That was the first prequel. If you make them watch Jar Jar Binks in The Phantom Menace, if that's their first taste to Star Wars, they'll never come back. You start with the original trilogy. You start with Episodes 4, 5, and 6 before you circle back to Episode 1. And a texter writes, and Alex, you are 1,000% correct. I made that mistake. I was dating this young lady. She had never seen Star Wars, and I made the mistake of telling her to start with Episode 1. She fell asleep and refused to watch the other episodes with me. That's what happens every time. Another texter writes in, not just that. If you start with Episode 1, then you miss the whole Darth Vader being Luke's father shock. Best moment in movie history. It's up there. One of the best moments in movie history. The revelation of Darth Vader being Luke's father. And that's going to be spoiled for you if you watch the prequels first, or it's not going to make any sense to you. So I can co-sign on that as well. And talking about dating young ladies who have never seen Star Wars, this was even more bizarre. So circa 07, I'm dating a young lady at that time. And, you know, this is like the early stages of the relationship. It didn't go anywhere, obviously, because I'm married to somebody completely different. But early stage of the relationship, we're getting to know each other a little bit. And, you know, she reveals to me, yeah, I really like Star Wars. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I love Star Wars. And then she says, yeah, but I haven't seen the old movies. I've only seen the prequels. What? You're not a fan of Star Wars. I'm sorry. I should have known that day that the relationship was going nowhere. But I made the mistake of continuing on. Because men don't think the proper way when you're getting into a relationship. Didn't work out. Long story short. We continue till 8:30 here tonight. Panthers hockey this evening on the radio station. Florida Panthers on the road at the Colorado Avalanche. Doug Plagans, the voice of the Cats, will join us at around 8:15 tonight to set the scene. Then you'll have K-Raj and Doug hosting our Panthers preview at 8:30 this evening to take you up until a 9 p.m. face-off. But we have a new edition of Clickbait coming up next here on WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. We know you spend a lot of time online. Well, so do we. Here's tonight's edition of Clickbait on the Alex Dano Show.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was like a big thing for bros, like friends, like male friends, to give each other gifts. I think that's now becoming more of a thing. So I was thinking about this earlier today when I saw the story I'm going to get to here in a second. Like, what's the best gift I've ever received just from a friend of mine? No special occasion, not necessarily Christmas or my birthday. Frank Zaffrey once gave me a quarterdeck jacket, which I think I wore twice. I love the quarterdeck. I got to look for that jacket. Manny Chang once brought me chocolates from Machu Picchu. And Alex Solana, who works here, actually, this may be one of the coolest gifts that a bro has ever given me. One of our producers here at the station, Alex Solana, he was in Italy recently, and he actually brought me an Inter Milan hat from Italy, which I thought was very nice. I do wear that quite often to this day. And probably the best gift I've ever given to a friend was, coming back from Japan, I gave Manny Chang Star Wars chopsticks that I actually bought in Japan. They're little green lightsabers. I wish I had a friend like George Clooney. This guy goes the extra mile. I don't know why George Clooney and I aren't bros. You heard about this from MSNBC? Friendship bracelets, please. George Clooney is an expert at gift giving. We're talking cold hard cash, some serious dinero. Randy Gerber, one of Clooney's closest pals, revealed during a recent chat on MSNBC's Headliners that the star gifted his inner circle $1 million each. And wait for it, the actor paid their taxes for the year as well. And I'm guessing if you're bros with George Clooney, you probably have like some serious property tax because you're probably rich. But how about that? just for being a friend of George Clooney, for being one of 14 of Clooney's closest pals, here's $1 million. And I'm paying the government. I'm paying your taxes for you for a year. Now, some might say that's kind of a thoughtless gift. Like, I guarantee you there are like a few women listening right now. Oh, he put no thought into that. He should have gotten them like Maseratis or something. I got news for you. Men, we want cash. If every one of my relatives just gave me some cash for Christmas, like if you're going to buy me a gift that's worth $45 off the shelf, $150 off the shelf, whatever it is, if you were to just give me the cash equivalent, I would not complain. But it's a secret that nobody I'm related to has been able to solve. I'm able to circumvent that sometimes by asking for gift cards, because at least then you feel like you're getting the person something. Occasionally that will work. You know, I'll take an iTunes gift card, a Best Buy gift card, what have you. But usually they have to feel like, no. Instead of giving you $45 cash, let me get you $45 worth of undershirts and socks, and that's going to be an amazing Christmas. It's never an amazing Christmas when you do it that way. I think George Clooney is onto something. If you can actually afford that, what better way to show your appreciation to your friends than $1 million cash? And this is what it's like to be friends of Clooney. There's a group of guys that we call the boys, Gerber said. George had called me and the boys and said, hey, mark September 17th, 2013 on your calendar. Everyone's going to come by my house for dinner. And that's probably the house that he has on Lake Como in Italy, like one of the most expensive places to buy, like a castle is basically what he has. Gerber said that when the crew arrived at the dinner, there were black designer luggage bags at each setting on the table. So in front of each setting, black designer luggage bags. George begins to say, listen, I want you guys to know how much you've meant to me and how much you mean to me in my life. I came to LA. I slept on your couch. I'm so fortunate in my life to have all of you, and I couldn't be where I am today without all of you. So it was really important to me that while we're still all here together, that I give back. So I want you all to open your suitcases. And what do you think was inside the suitcases? $1 million cash. Like, we're not talking like a transfer into your bank account or PayPal. George Clooney has just sent you $1 million. Literally a suitcase full of cash. That's a real friend right there. That's a little bit better than the chocolates I got from Machu Picchu. George Clooney, $1 million. So $14 million plus paying off their taxes is what Clooney spent on his friends. That's a friend right there. George Clooney, you are the man, sir. So we go from generosity to chaos. I don't know if there are bath salts involved here or what. You know, I watched a video of this from NBC4 in Washington, D.C., I've got the audio for you from that newscast. I don't think the audio is going to do it justice, but here is a little something that caused a very serious traffic jam in Washington, D.C., right by the Dulles Airport, which is an extremely – I've driven by there before. Very, very difficult spot to drive by, and this is what you have to deal with when you're sitting in traffic near Dulles.
Good evening, and you thought it was cold out there tonight? The bizarre scene that played out on a busy Northern Virginia highway just outside Dulles Airport.
That's a naked guy going berserk after his truck was involved in a crash during rush hour.
Get away from him!
Live video. Is it a Hollywood director? Seems like what they're all doing these days.
People driving by stopped to record his rampage on their cell phones, and it became a big problem for drivers trying to head south on Route 28.
News 4's Jackie Benson is live for us along that road tonight to try to make sense of all of this. Jackie, where do you even begin?
Jim, no one had seen a rush hour delay quite like this
before.
Safe
to say that.
In your car. Get away from me!
The naked dude was like lunging at that woman's car. Hey, listen, I'm a Miami driver, so I've seen a lot of crazy stuff over the years. Like, I have flashbacks of things I've seen. I once had a person in front of me. This is, you know, around 2006. Person driving right in front of me literally threw like a computer tower, like a Dell computer, like a desktop out their car window. I ran over it, had damage to the bottom of my car. I have actually seen at least one dead body on the Palmetto Expressway after, I'm sure, what was a very tragic accident, putting the body into a body bag. I've driven by that before, but I can't tell you, in all my years of experiencing crazy drivers, rush hour traffic, I have never encountered a naked man on a rampage. That's one thing I've never seen before. So the video is amazing. I played you the audio there from NBC4 in D.C. So just to paint a picture for you, this guy's involved in a car crash, gets out of his truck. He's very angry. I guess the person in front of him stopped short, even though when you hit somebody from behind, it's your fault, you know, but he blamed the guy in front of him, gets out of the truck, starts stripping naked, jumps on the truck in front of him, and starts like hammer fisting the back of the truck like King Kong and running at cars. Like, there had to be bath salts involved there. There had to be. I'm guessing the bath salts have made their way from like South Beach up to Washington, D.C., because there had to be something else at play there. One thing I've never encountered in all my years of rush hour traffic, angry people driving, road rage, I've never encountered a guy who, like whose go-to move is that? You're really angry, so the only way to express your anger on a day where it's 25 degrees outside is to strip completely naked. Like, the only way you can possibly display to people how angry you are at that moment is to strip completely naked and go on a rampage. Something I'll probably never see again in my life. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Enrique. You're on QAM. What's up, Enrique?
How you doing, Donu?
Good, man. How about you?
Oh, I'm great, buddy. I'm great.
Yeah, I know you're great. You got Giancarlo Stanton. I know Enrique's a big Yankee fan. Congratulations, by the way. I've got no ill will towards you, my friend. I knew Stanton was not long for the Marlins, and the Yankees are going to be a lot of fun to watch next year.
Thank you, my man. I appreciate the props. I really do, man. Had to call in. You know what I'm saying? I've been a little hectic listening to Miami radio this week. Like, you know, I feel for you guys. I do. I feel for Marlins fans or whatever. But, like, you know, it's been weird for me specifically because I'm hearing everybody sad and I'm just ecstatic. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, but I can sympathize. You know what I'm saying? Dono, it's funny, actually, man, thinking about it. You and me, we've come full circle on this because one of the first times we ever touched the Yankees and Stanton, you know, you were talking about the home run derby and
That's right. Saying
how you wanted the young Padawan to get knocked down by the master, a little Star Wars joke since you're there talking about Star Wars. And now the Padawan gets to learn under the master, under your...
yeah, it's amazing. You're right, that did come full circle because I was all... pumping my fists. I was excited for that home run derby. I wanted Stanton to beat Aaron Judge's butt in the derby because I thought Judge was being hyped too much because he's a Yankee and Stanton's a Marlin, doesn't get enough props, and now they're both Yankees, which kind of goes to show you my life as a Marlins fan. I should never get used to nice things, whether it be Miguel Cabrera or Giancarlo Stanton. I should never get used to nice things because they will get taken away from me.
Hey, man, you never know. All I know is it's going to be a home run derby from here on out, every batting practice. But you never know, Dono. You know what I'm saying? I know I might be in the minority here, but you never know. Maybe Jeter will turn it around for you guys, and you guys will actually start keeping players. I mean, it doesn't look good. It looks bleak. I heard you earlier in the show talking about what trust can you have. But, I mean, look at it this way. It can't get no worse than what you guys have with Loria. So just... You know,
well, see, I don't know about that because the optics were definitely worse with Loria because he always would just lie to your faces and Loria would go against his word and he was very bad at playing the PR game. But all of a sudden it looks like Derek Jeter is not even willing to spend as much money on the roster as Jeffrey Loria does. So maybe it can get worse.
Only time will tell, man. The only reason I say it, and I'm going to let you go with this because I also wanted to get your opinion on the rest of the offseason, which, by the way, speaking of my Yankees, we might even be in on Manny Machado. Talk about overkill there.
Wow.
But, yeah. But, you know, the way you got to look at it, man, is that at the end of the day, and you know, I heard Hawk talking about it earlier, and he didn't want to look at it this way, but it's like, think about it. You're coming into a business where – all these contracts are done by the previous regime. They got to clean house somehow. I even heard Cutler and his last talk about it through text, and they got to clean house somehow to then make a profit. And it's all on Marlins fans to, you know what I'm saying, put their money where their mouth is. And
I understand. It's just it's a hard sell for baseball fans to talk about turning a profit. Like, we want the profit to come after winning comes, and it's been so much mediocrity and worse just churning, You know, anytime you get a player who looks special, you trade him away or you lose him, you bring in minor leaguers who don't pan out. It's like people have a hard time caring about their profitability. They want to see the team win.
Amen. Cannot argue with that. You know what I'm saying? Cannot argue with that. It puts it in a little bit of a stalemate because the new front office is like, hey, what did we do? You know what I'm saying? We just want to bring you guys out to the ballpark. And then you guys are like, no, we're not coming out until you show us something. So it's like, you know, something's got to give. And like I said, man, I mean, I might be a Yankee fan, but I live here and I wouldn't love nothing more. I told you this when I saw you at Twin Peaks. I would love nothing more for you as a Marlin fan and for, like, the rest of Marlin fans to enjoy a little success as long as it's not at the hands of my Yankees.
Well, don't worry about me anymore, Enrique, because I decided today I'm no longer a Marlins fan. I'm a free agent. Like, I'm just going to watch baseball. I'm going to enjoy baseball. I'm not going to get wrapped up in these Marlins because I'm tired of rooting for a minor league team.
Well, hey, you can always be a Yankee fan, Dono. follow Stanton to the Yankees, my man.
I appreciate you, man.
All right, man. Take care.
Like, I don't think I can do that either, though. And, like, I'm being honest. Like, this is not me trolling or just riffing here, poking fun at the Marlins. Like, I think that this week, I think Ozuna was the last straw for me. It was. Because I guess I'm not going to justify trading away Stanton, but at least I somewhat understand it and I expected it to happen. And then you're thinking, okay, now we can build around Marcell Ozuna. No, we got to deal Marcell Ozuna away. Anybody who's making more money than Derek Jeter at this point, we've got to get rid of their asses. And, you know, even though they have apparently expressed a desire to keep Christian Yelich, they could very well end up cutting him loose as well. It's like I've got no reason to root for this team at this point. Like, why would I waste my time rooting for a team that is not showing any effort in actually competing? Like a team that just wants to break even. We're thinking about turning a profit. Oh, maybe we can improve that TV deal and get a few more dollars when the deal expires. Oh, maybe we can save some money on the roster. We'll raise ticket prices just a little bit so we can be in the black next year and not be in the red. Yeah, I just want to root for a winner, but it's become very apparent to me that the Miami Marlins are going to continue to be a AAA club. They're going to continue to be a farm system for the bigger teams with deeper pockets, with more commitment to win. And anytime you see a nice young player develop into something of a commodity, that commodity is going to be dealt away from more minor leaguers. You'll start the process over again every few years. It's a pawn shop is what the Marlins are. Thank you, Tito. The Marlins are the pawn shop for the majors. They are the pawn shop for Major League Baseball. Like, why am I going to waste my emotions rooting for that team? I'd be better off just rooting for an actual minor league team. Do the Albuquerque Isotopes still exist? I always thought that was a great name for a baseball team. I'm going to become an Albuquerque Isotopes fan because at least you understand if you're rooting for an actual AAA club, you realize that's what they are. It's a farm team. They're producing talent for major league clubs, and you can watch them compete with other farm teams. I can watch the Albuquerque Isotopes take on the Sioux Falls Waterfalls. Like, I did, that was a terrible improvisation on my part, but I think the Albuquerque Isotopes really do exist. I'm going to root for an actual minor league team because at least then you know what you're getting. You're getting a farm team. I'm tired of rooting for a farm team in the major leagues. I want to root for an actual farm team. I'm better off that way. Take more calls next here on WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
I learned a lot during that commercial break about the Albuquerque Isotopes, my new baseball team that I root for. They used to be, years ago, they used to be the Marlins AAA affiliate, but they did some shuffling. They're now the Colorado Rockies affiliate. But the Albuquerque Isotopes, this is a good time to get behind Isotopes baseball. According to Forbes, they are the 14th most profitable minor league team, valued at over $34 million. Like that's almost as much as the Marlins are worth at this point with the rosters they're trading away. I know that that Sherman and Jeter, you know, they got like $1 billion in loans to buy the team, but yeah, after trading away Stanton and Ozuna and D. Gordon, they're probably barely over $34 million at this point. So the time is now, friends, to get behind the Isotopes, and their logo looks like an actual isotope, which I think is very creative. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Manny. You're on WQAM. What's up, Manny?
Hey, Dono, you know I was going to talk about the Heat, but you got to give me a little bit of time. I mean,
all right.
This Marlins thing stinks to high hell. But you know what? I don't blame the broke Jeter Sherman group.
Yeah, but they never should have been allowed to buy it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So the first culprit is MLB and the owners. That's number one. But even then, you got to kind of think back a little bit in Marlins history when I was a fan. Remember John Henry? Everybody was like, what a cheesecake.
Yes,
I do. He went to Boston, and he spent $200 million a year, right? And the reason I'm coming up with that is that this market, based on the finances of MLB, they don't have a cap. I mean, as a fan that loves players, I hate caps. But baseball, without a cap, is going to become, fastly going to become the fourth sport. You only have 5 to 7 teams in Major League Baseball that actually can compete for a world championship.
Right.
And then someone might get lucky here and there, like the Houston Astros. And then in 2 or 3 years, you know what's going to happen to Houston Astros? They're going to be selling assets on the pennies on the dollar like everybody else.
Yep.
Right? And the reason I bring that up is I want fans to understand that yes, these broke owners that we got, and Lawyer was broke. Lawyer was really broke, right? But the economics of baseball is not going to be kind to South Florida unless there is a hard cap. And I, on principle, and people are like, well, Manny, you're not supporting how they can get better if you're not going to support. I'm like, listen. I'm a Miami-Dade taxpayer. I got built for $2 billion on a stadium. Mm. That's enough, right? So I, on principle, have not ever been to that stadium and will never, because just the Marlins in itself are not going to – you can't buy a jersey, unfortunately. You buy a jersey today, but you better be ready to sell it on the scrap heap in a month. You know, it's pretty sad, but now back to the Heat. We're still on?
Yeah, absolutely. You're still rolling,
right,
my friend.
Man. That was my diatribe there on the Marlins. That's just ridiculous. But the Heat, you know, I am a Don Godfather fan. That's my guy. And that's why I want to hold my fire to at least 20, 25 games. This team has a bunch of, you know, good to above average parts, but this team is just not good.
Well, they got a bunch of, I thought Ira Winterman said it best, they've got a bunch of pieces. They got a bunch of complimentary players. They got a bunch of third, fourth, and fifth scoring options. They don't have a closer. Like, you see what happens, Manny, last night.
Yep.
When you go up against Damian Lillard, who, you know, he's not the best player in the league, but Damian Lillard is a proven closer. This is a guy who can rip your throat out in the fourth quarter. And the Heat had virtually shut him down for the first three quarters of the game. And then, as true closers do, as true all-stars do, he comes alive and he puts his foot down on your jugular in the fourth quarter. The Heat don't have a guy who can do that consistently.
Yep. The NBA is not that type of league. You need to have a bona fide killer. And the Heat has nice pieces. I mean, I'm not ragging down on folks. I was hoping it was going to be Deion. Deion doesn't look like he's healthy enough, or something is wrong with Deion because he has that dog in him. But I don't think that's the answer. And now the contracts that Pat, that's why I say I'm a Pat fan. The contract that Pat put together are not atrocious. They can be moved, all of them. The only person on that team, and people would be like, Manny, you're crazy. The only person that I think that is not movable, not because he is the best, is the one, is Whiteside. Because what? There's no one. There's only 4 to 6 players in the league that can do what he's done. So outside of that, everyone else is bait to do something. But,
yeah.
You know, Pat rolled the dice, see if that 30-11 can hold up. And we see it was just they got hot. And a lot of people don't remember that Justin Winslow did not play the entire year, and it was Rodney Magruder. Rodney Magruder might be somebody that no one is paying any accolades to, but that guy is the glue guy. If you look at, you know, how they get helter-skelter, he's the guy that might be the Udonis Haslam of this next era.
I hope so. Let me let you run on that note, man, because I'm up against it. And let me say this, though, real quick on Pat Riley. You know, people can talk about him rolling the dice, bringing the band back together that went 30-11 down the stretch. Like, he did that out of necessity because that wasn't plan A. Let's not pretend that, okay, so mid-April came around last year. You didn't make the playoffs. Let's not pretend late April Pat Riley is sitting in his office with many leather-bound books and rich mahogany. Like, he's not sitting there with his feet up on the desk saying, you know what's going to be awesome? When we re-sign Deion Waiters and we bring back James Johnson, and I'm going to go after Kelly Olynyk. We're going to do it up big this offseason. We're going to bring the band together. We're going to bring the band back together. Plus, we're going to add a guy with a ponytail from Boston. And then maybe we can also draft Bam Adebayo, which actually I do agree with. But like that wasn't plan A. When Pat Riley was sitting in his mahogany office meditating about the future, he was thinking about Gordon Hayward. He wasn't thinking about, oh, I cannot wait to throw a fat stack of cash at Deion Waiters and James Johnson. Like, he was fantasizing about the quote-unquote whale, the biggest whale available to him in that offseason was Gordon Hayward. That's the guy that Pat Riley was dreaming about at night. That came out kind of sounding kind of weird, but you know what I mean. He was, you know, riding a horse, probably Gordon Hayward in the Pat Riley dream, shirtless. No, I don't know how that went down. But when Pat Riley was thinking about the future, plan A was not bringing the band back together. Plan A was upgrading. Bringing the band back together was plan B, maybe even plan C. And unfortunately, because a lot of Heat fans don't want to admit this, because, yeah, Pat Riley is the guy who traded for Shaq. Pat Riley is the guy who signed the big three. Pat Riley is one of the greatest NBA executives of all time, if not the greatest, period. But Heat fans don't want to admit that Pat Riley has whiffed a few times. He's whiffed in a few drafts. He's whiffed in a few free agent periods. You know, he tried to woo Kevin Durant. Didn't work out. You were handicapped in that spot because you couldn't offer what some other teams offered. Same thing with Gordon Hayward. You swung and you missed on that. So let's not pretend that Deion Waiters and James Johnson and Kelly Olynyk were plan A, because they were not plan A. Pat Riley brought the band back together because he had to bring the band back together, because when you were unable to re-sign Gordon Hayward, you couldn't come back with nothing. At that point, it became necessary to bring the band back together. We'll hear some Miami Dolphins sound when we come back. Some really good stuff today from Dolphins defensive coordinator Matt Burke, Jay Cutler, and Ndamukong Suh spoke to the media today. We will discuss next here on WQAM.
This podcast was presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.